Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you.
Welcome to another enlightening episode of University Drive. I'm your host, Craig Smith. In this episode, we are delving into academia, culture, and societal growth by having a conversation with the NE11 Exhibition, Innovation, and the Future. We have as our guest, Ricardo Barrett, Curatorial Manager, and Letitia Pratt, Curatorial Associate at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We'll be exploring the role of the National University in fueling the arts and how the arts and the orange economy are fundamental to a healthy and thriving society. Welcome, Ricardo and Letitia.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Let's delve right into this conversation. So, National Exhibition 11, you're calling it the NE11, has a fascinating theme described as a journey into the void, where artists are tasked with visualizing new ways of being through Caribbean futurism. Ricardo, can you tell us more about this concept and how it reflects Bahamian identity and culture?
So when we think about the National Exhibition, we often find ourselves with the question of what's in the ethos now, what's happening, what are the questions that are compelling to this generation or now. And the NE is every 2 years. So it's interesting because you see this reflection of what's happening internationally and also locally. So with that being said, NE, it's going to be next year, March. We have asked artists, creatives to respond to thinking of how we've just as a nation reached 50 years of independence. And then in that same year, last year, we would have the gallery, the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas would have reached 20 years. And in this time, we're thinking, that's not that old, but as a country, I think we have experienced a lot of, I would say, like, interesting conversations and growth in a certain way, because we have this duality of this country that's like first world in certain aspects, but in other aspects, we have like this third world kind of like infrastructure, if I could say it that way. So NE11 is kind of speaking to like, what is the journey from here? Like, how do you see us as a country, as a people, moving from this point? Is it growth? Do you see us moving backward? And as it reflects to themes of Afrofuturism, and I mean, anybody who sees the branding kind of has this idea of space, this adventure, this idea of going into the beyond, the unknown, and a word that is coming like into the void. Like, what is this space that we're moving into? Like, can you imagine it being this space that is gonna be filled with like chaos? Is it gonna be filled with, you know, more adventures as it relates to what it means to be a Bahamian? Do you see that evolving? So there's a lot of themes that's coming up, and I'm pretty sure Letitia has her own like reflections on the theming, because we both came up with it together.
Okay, well, what I'd like either of you to discuss really quickly before we go ahead is the idea of, because you mentioned it, Ricardo, Afrofuturism. So can you break that down for us a little bit, explain what that is? And I guess you guys are moving maybe beyond Afrofuturism to more specific Caribbean futurism. So can you guys sort of talk about those two and the distinctions for us, please?
Palette to t-shirt, yeah.
Afrofuturism, as I know it to be, because there's a lot of definitions for it, but Afrofuturism is thinking about how Africanness or the African diaspora would be considered in the future, or how it's reflected really right now in science fiction and fantasy, right? And how these genres, science fiction and fantasy, reflect the current state of the African diaspora. And so when we think about Caribbean futurism, because we're in the Bahamas and not only, I mean, although we're 85% African people, there are other people here, and there's a milieu of like races and cultures and things that are happening on this on these islands. And when we talk about Caribbean futurism, it's like, how does this milieu like reflect it, like in science fiction and fantasy? What does that mean? Like, what does it mean to be Caribbean in the future? Or what, and really, we're asking, what does it mean to be Caribbean now? And how do you see that growing into the future? So I think, I don't know if that's like a clear, I want to say that's a clear definition, but yeah, science fiction, fantasy, Black people, Caribbean,
Yeah, I think that's enough. I know in terms of thinking through Afrofuturism in academia, a lot of it comes or came from, again, a lot of science fiction and the notion that, you think about a lot of the films and novels that are set in the future or deep space or whatever, and people of African descent were never there,
are
right?
never
They're
there.
never there. And so a lot of people are like, well, what happened to us? Where are we in the future,
Did they
right?
die?
Until something like Star Trek came, and then we had Lieutenant Uhura, and then after that, other texts came out. So again, it's literally about thinking about ourselves in the future and
Yes.
what are we doing in the future. And I think that's really interesting in terms of the Caribbean space and the Bahamas in particular, especially with global warming, sea waters rising, and so on.
Exactly.
So it's really interesting to think about, yeah, where are we now, but where are we heading, and what we do now, how does that affect where we'll be in the
Where
future,
will we be in the future?
if we will be in the
Exactly.
future as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's really interesting. Letitia, can you talk about maybe how you see the theme influencing the types of artwork and mediums that'll be submitted for NE11?
Well, Ricardo and I were really, we really want all the, I mean, all, sorry, all genres
Mediums.
of artwork, mediums,
Yeah.
thank you, Ricardo, mediums of artwork to be like submitted to this. But I do, I don't, and I don't want to influence it too much, but I do would like, I would like to see how you we interact with like sort of the milieu I was talking about, sort of the intermingling of like different, if you if I was to say like different races and nationalities and all of these things, how does that reflect in the genre you chose? Or do you, is it a cross-genre thing? Looking for how this, how it's reflected in like what you build, this like idea of multiplicity, how does that reflect in the genre you chose? So it's not really like I'm looking for paintings, or like, I'm looking for something innovative,
Okay. All right. Ricardo, what about you? What do you think about this? How will the theme influence the types of artwork? What do you expect, if anything?
Well, with my experience with the Annies, because I've had the privilege to be a part of several in the planning and actually present in one, but I know we're going to expect like a plethora of different mediums. But this time around, I'm hoping that we attract persons who feel as if, or who are in this position or in the field of like fashion design, even like thinking about like production design, those types of theming, and the non, I would say, traditional kind of like aspects of the creative process here in the Bahamas, because oftentimes, and the Annie has served for that for multiple disciplines of creatives, not just visual artists as it relates to paintings, drawings and sculpture, but writers, poets, spoken word. I'm hoping that this theme could, inspire those types of creatives as well to submit, especially given the fact that me and the teacher, funny enough, are both like Trekkies, and like
Yeah, that's
thinking
how
of this,
we got to this.
yeah, thinking of this theme, kind of like it was just like a match made, because we are like both like really gravitated towards a piece in the collection by Jolyon Smith. It's called Transformation, and it's very, very like Afro futurism like themed, even though the painting itself was made prior to the, the birth of the concept in terms of it having like a name, the movement. But it's interesting because when we came up with this theme, the teacher having this writer, background, being this poet, and me kind of like totally focused on this, like the visuals coming together and thinking of this theme, we both wanna have this theme be very attractive to persons who are from all walks of the creative life. And again, with the NE, we have done that before, but I think this time around, I want those people to feel like, compelled to actually submit, not feel like, hey, it's just paintings and drawings we're looking for. We're looking for all of the creatives to submit to this.
I think that's really important because I do believe that a lot of times when people think about the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, right, there's this idea of who goes to the space and who the space is open for and the type of art that, is allowed in the space. And so I'm really glad that you sort of clarified and, made it clear that this is for all creatives and all of it is art as well. And all of it is worthy of being presented in some place like the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, because the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas is for the Bahamian people, right? Not just a certain segment of Bahamian people. So I think that's really important to get that message out. Are you guys doing anything specific to help get that idea out a little bit more? Or is it just in terms of the call, you're hoping that the call will, speak to everybody?
We're hoping that the call speak to everybody. I don't. We have to do a lot of work of trying to deconstruct the idea that the National Art Gallery is only for the elite. I know that there's been a lot of that in like the past with Holly and Natalie and Ricardo's work, and Amanda, those work, but there's still a lot of work to do because sometimes Bahamian people feel like they're not worthy of things that are like fun. I don't know. I don't know the mindset because I don't have that mindset,
Right.
but like just I don't know, or
And
worthy of being in a
also,
space like that.
right. Also, too, is this open to folks, Bahamians outside of Nassau? Because a lot of times, too, I think that we tend to think that everything is very Nassau centric. Are we reaching out to family islands or maybe Bahamians in other spaces as well?
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
always the Annie. The Annie has always been open to Bahamians everywhere, and even residents. I think, and to piggyback on the what the teacher was saying, like, it's been a lot of work trying to deconstruct this idea again of the gallery or the National Art Gallery being, or just art in general, because that's the bigger issue, is like art in general is this thing that a lot of people feel as if is, again, for the elite or certain demographic or a certain group of people that have a certain amount of money or look a certain way, you know.
Right.
So it's a lot of work trying to deconstruct that concept. And I think it starts from, I mean, to be honest, the schools, you know, even the way we're taught, you know, art is seen as this other, you know, thing that you could take to make your GPA better, when technically it actually does it, because it's art is hard, you know. So I think it's a lot of that needs to happen from the younger generation going up, and then again, thinking of the fact that the National Art Gallery being one of the longest running art, you know, institutions in the country has only been here 20 years. So a lot of the newer generation now are getting the chance to have that experience, like coming on school tours and all these things, the experience, and then all these other art galleries that are now, you know, the commercial spaces. So I feel like that's changing steadily, especially with the youth. They're more exposed to art, and I think they appreciate it more. But that being said, we still have a lot of older persons who are the parents of some of these children and the younger generation who still have this mindset, you know. So it's going to take some time, but I think it's happening slowly but surely. But the mindset is still there, you know.
All right, so if someone is listening to the show now and they're like, okay, it's open for us and for everybody. So tell us a little bit about what's involved in presenting in the NE11. How can people become a part of it? Where do they submit? And then what's the process?
So we have a submissions email. If you go on the website or our Instagram, there's a email that's at the end of the any page that says submissions at nagb.org.bs. Send a proposal in there. The proposal, and we're trying to speak more to this. It doesn't have It's a proposal, so it doesn't have to be like a completed, for instance, painting that you want to submit. But like, it's you can just propose an idea, and you will have like time, should you be accepted, about 4 months to complete that. But once you submit to submissions email, there will be a jury process. We would have some studio visit, and you should know if you were to be accepted by early August. Yeah, and then you start on the journey of like building your project, and it'll be open in March.
All right. Ricardo, anything to add to that?
So, just to speak a little bit more to it. So I often, because we had a open forum about it, and again, adding to, yes, what Letitia said. So a proposal. So oftentimes we just let artists know. You could have a proposal could come in many forms depending on your practice. But what's most important is we need to obviously have all of your information. So usually that's a short bio. And we need to have your CV. So, and a lot of people get intimidated by the CV because, you know, you have a lot of up and coming artists who probably haven't shown a lot of work. But it's just important for us to have that wow, for the judges to know. Even for seasoned artists or up and coming artists who we are aware of, we still need to know your CV for other persons who aren't aware of your practice. So that's important. Like Letitia said, details about the work. It doesn't have to be a finished work. It's a proposal. So you're proposing this idea of, hey, this is the artwork, the piece that I'm submitting or I would like to submit. And usually you just give a plethora of ideas, sketches, depending on what it is. The more details, the better. And also probably like a summary, depending on the concept of the piece. Everything that you feel would help give the judges a sense of what you're doing or what you want to do is always a good call in adding to the proposal, even previous work. You know, if you have website, if you have a website, if you have a Instagram that shows kind of like your style of work, if it's in line with what you're doing, all of that helps in the judging process and leading to you being accepted in the any.
Okay, and what would be the deadline? How soon do folks have to have this stuff into you guys?
By July 4th. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, so July 4th. And I know people like to say, oh, is it July 4th that the next day, July 4th? It's just
Ten,
like
like
we've just
11.
been yeah, we've been just telling people like, okay, 11:59, like on the dot. So yeah.
Okay, so July 4th, Independent American Independence Day,
Hello,
folks must have their stuff in. Okay, great. All right, so this is a really great conversation. We have to take a break. So everyone stay tuned for more insights into NE11 exhibition and the transformative power of the arts. You're listening to University Drive. We'll be right back after these messages.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Welcome back to University Drive. We're having a conversation with Richardo Barrett and Letitia Pratt of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas discussing NE11 and the critical role of the arts. Letitia, in your opinion, how can national universities support and fuel the arts, and why is that important?
By investing money into it. That's my opinion. I think that's the most practical one. I think from what I understand, I like better studios and like bringing in like paying lectures, Bahamian lectures or otherwise, whatever. There's a lot of people that have the credentials to be lecturers at the University of Bahamas. That they could support. That's, yeah, just money.
Right.
And I think it's important because it's just important. You
Okay.
know? Well, it's important because the Bahamian people need to critically think. And I think the disillusion of the support for art, for the arts in general, reflects in people having or people struggling to like think for themselves or critically engage with information that is presented to them. So I that's why it's important. Also to just enjoy life. Life, I mean, art just is just good for your life in general, for joy. And you don't want everybody depressed anyway.
Richardo, what are your thoughts on how the National University can support and fuel the arts, and why is it important that they do so?
Well, I am a big believer in you start at home. So I believe, I mean, I think it's in line with what Letitia also suggested. But I think like a big investment internally is needed as it relates to the art department. Because I think the highest level just in art you could get at UB is still the associate's degree. And I think anything higher would be art education. So I think if there's like an investment in that department as it relates to, offering a bachelor's, being able to support, more art professionals. We have amazing artists over here who've gone off and gotten their degrees and come back, and which a lot of them don't have to, and some haven't come back, they've stayed abroad. But just seeing the amount of creativity and creative that has come out of this space, some who have lectured at COB, attended COB, I mean, at the time, now UB. And, we see it all around. We have international Bahamian artists who are like going like crazy places. Like, I can't even in space, all these different things. So I think like if there's an investment in that field in the university, that instead of us getting people back from the international spaces and schools, we basically be putting them out there, with these degrees, with this experience from this like creative community. So I believe that's where it begins. And I feel like if it begins there, it will basically filter out into the rest of the, the nation.
So that makes me think of this quote that you have on your homepage, and it's by Pat Ramming. And I want you guys to talk to us a little bit about this and how you see this as it relates to NE11. The quote, let me read it. It goes partly. The only institution that can talk about where we need to go is the institution of art. It is the only institution whose job it is to step into the future, look around, and come back and say, this is where we need to go. And so, artists, please understand this. Your job is not to be popular. Your job is not to be journalist. It is the artist's job to risk their life to go into the future and tell us where to go, end quote. So talk to us a little bit about that quote and how you see it fueling your ideas behind NE11.
Ladies first,
Well,
Leticia.
I went to a yeah I went to a dinner thing. Anyway, the point is I heard Pat say this quote on stage, Pat Ramming say this quote on stage, and I thought that it was so relevant to what me and Richard was thinking for NE11, mostly because we are asking artists with this theme to envision what it's like we said, to be Bahamian and not and we both Ricardo and I we really believe that art is one of the ways that we people revolutionize themselves or really like think through the issues that we have in society, or in our culture. And Pat's like this quote sort of affirms this theory, that art is not just a frivolous thing. I mean, although it could be, but it's always reflecting, well, what can we, how can we improve ourselves? When Antonius Roberts or makes something, he tried to came up with an aesthetic for what Bahamianess is in the 80s. Whether he failed or succeeded, up to your own opinion. But what he was doing was trying to figure out what it's like, what it is to be Bahamian through his artwork, and how can that aesthetic go into the future? And we're asking the people to do the same thing, and art in general does the same thing.
All right, Ricardo.
Yes, I agree. And I think as it relates to the quote, it reminds me of I can't remember the actual article at this point, but it references the artist living internally imaginary, if you may say, if you could say it that way, on the outskirts of society, like you're living in this space that doesn't exist. And your job, again, is to ask these questions and to imagine like what the world would be like better, or what the space you're in would be like better, which is why most oftentimes like creatives are seen as like quote unquote like the
Right.
weirdos, or the people who are like the trendsetters, or they're just the people use the term like you're born before your time, or like there's people out there, musicians who have like created music that's now being celebrated years after the fact, sometimes after they're dead and gone. So I believe, like, as it relates to that quote, it's speaking to the similar practice or idea of like artists being like this, or creatives being like the way pavers, the persons who like kind of like say, hey, this is where we need to go, and this is the plan forward. Whether that be in a concept that they're creating visually, whether that be musically, even as it relates to fashion and like the economy, and discussing topics like climate change. There are artists who have been talking about that for years, but now their work is apparently like, the end thing, because it's a conversation that the rest of society has caught up to. So
I think it's really interesting. And the part of this quote that really got me is your job is not to be popular. It is the artist's job to risk their life to go into the future and tell us where to go. I mean, we're asking a lot of our artists, aren't we?
and
Well,
I
that's what they do.
think, I would say it's asking a lot, but at the same time, I think in that statement, he's just saying what artists generally are doing anyway, right? Like I feel like a lot of artists are already doing that, so it's like, I think what he's reaffirming is that, hey, don't get sidetracked with what you are already doing. Don't get compelled with the trying to be, popular or trying to be famous now, that type of way. Like Vincent van Gogh, for a perfect example, the man painted and painted and painted to the point where he went crazy because, and I think really, it was because he was trying to attain this level of fame and wanting like the attention of the then, artists, the people who were saying like his paintings were garbage. He didn't know what he was doing. And when he passed away years later, I mean, the guy only sold one painting to his brother, when he was
Right.
alive. And then he passed away years later, all of a sudden he was innovative and all these things. So I think what Padraig is saying in this quote is he's just reaffirming what artists are doing like anyway. And I feel like most creatives, especially going through, even if you're not, went through school, like you didn't go to school to learn, you have to be kind of like thick-skinned, because people are going to criticize your process, whether in a good way or a bad way. And after a certain point in time, you have to like, take the criticism, but don't let the criticism kind of like propel you from like this goal of what it means to create and produce work.
All right, I like that. I like that. So let's explore some of the thought-provoking questions posed by N11. Ricardo, could you elaborate on how artists might approach questions like, quote, "What exists within the void?" end quote, or "How do we find a connection with each other in the rising technological landscape?" So these are questions that you posed in your call. Can you talk to us a little bit about those and how people might approach those, you think?
I think it, well, first, I think persons will interpret the void in many ways. So it'll first begin with like, what is the void for them? Like, what is this unknown? For some people, it's like a physical manifestation of this space that we cannot get to. Even thinking about like entering like literal space, like this breaking this barrier to explore. So for a lot of people, I think establishing what that void is, first in the theming or the direction of the work. And I suspect just even with conversations with persons, I mean, I guess it's pretty obvious why, but a lot of persons are exploring this idea of water being this unknown, you know, this unknown future as it relates to the nation, unknown as in, you know, like a huge percentage of the water has not been explored, but we've explored more of the space around the planet, you know, as a concept. And then also tying into the technological advancements we have, you know, this is an age where you could literally connect to someone like on the other side of the planet, but are you really connected to that person, right? You know, you could webcam someone right now that you've never met before in your entire life and probably never will, you know, back in, you know, going in the past, you know, people used to write these letters and used to be so heartfelt and so deep and everything. And now, you know, you could have a 2 second conversation on Instagram with someone you never met before and feel so emotionally distraught, you know? So I feel like people are going to engage it in a way where it could be very personal. Like personal experiences with, you know, living in the Bahamas, or, you know, the diaspora, and also this idea of being technologically advanced but still, you know, lonely in certain aspects, thinking of people's like personal lives and, you know, being able to do all these things but still not be connected. So I'm thinking people are gonna again engage it from what it is, the void, what is the void to them, and then technologically, like, what does that mean to actually be connected in terms of being in a first world or living in this first world kind of idea or amenities, you know, iPhone 14s and all this other stuff, but not being able to like pay a cable bill online or something. Like, it's interesting.
I'm trying to formulate my next question, but I don't even know how to formulate because I'm just trying to grapple with the idea or the notion of the void, right? In terms of thinking about the void and what that means. And void for me means nothingness, but nothingness, but also everything at the same time. And when I think about the void and I think about the Caribbean context, I think about, you know, the sort of conversation between V.S. Naipaul and Derek Walcott, where Naipaul says, nothing was created in the Caribbean, right? And so for some reason, that comes to my mind in terms of the void. But as Walcott sort of correctly says, no, everything is created here, right? We take a little bit of everything and we create. And so it's really interesting that idea of the void, and I feel like it's very fruitful in terms of what can be created within that space, or with even within the idea of the notion of the void. Letitia, both from a professional and a personal standpoint, and insight, what advice would you give to emerging artists who are looking to make their mark in any 11?
Just be yourself, honest, and do the work that you like to do and submit it. I think that from a personal standpoint, I graduated with a degree in writing, and there was no, from what I saw at the time of my graduation, there was no avenues, other avenues for me to get my writing out there. And the NE was, or and still is, one of the ways that I could have done that. If you're a young, like, writer or artist, and you want to get, because this is the purpose of the NE. Literally, it's the purpose of the NE to scout for new contemporary talent. So if you want to get your work out there, you just submit it and At least you'll be, if even if you shouldn't, if even if you're not accepted, you'll be on me and Ricardo's radar. We would have recorded you and we know who you are, and that, like, you'll be in our minds. That's the purpose of this Emmy as well. But yeah, just submit it and be honest and see if it fits, you know, this
So
Emmy at
a part of
least.
what, yeah, a part of what you're saying too is, and I think this goes back to what we were talking about before in terms of it's also about creating community, right? Because I think what we're saying is, right, you didn't feel like as a creative writer, you didn't necessarily have that community. And you're saying that, you know, even if people submit, even if they don't get in, you know, they'll be a part of this community. They'll be able to reach out and connect with other people. And again, I think that also goes back to what we were talking about before as well, even in terms of artists, because a lot of times Bahamian artists, I realize, work in silos, right? I'm a painter, I'm a graphic artist, I'm a singer, I'm a spoken word, and ne'er the twain shall meet, right? And I think that it's really important in terms of what you guys are doing, in terms of even again, Richardo talked about fashion, right? And we don't necessarily think about fashion as art as it relates to the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And so I really think that it's really important in terms of what you guys are doing, in terms of creating or building community and an avenue for artists from whatever walk of life to come together and make connections, right? Because in a space like this, I would imagine that maybe a writer and a photographer might meet, and who knows what kind of collaborations can unfold from that kind of meeting.
And your work will get better if you, when you interact with, well, anything other than your
Exactly.
primary of creating. Like, if you are a painter and you are friends with a musician, like Toni Morrison talks about this, that she was a novelist and she made friends with lots of poets and she interacted with poetry poets, and her writing is so good because of that, because she interacted with people that had the same ideas as her but communicated it in a different way. Like from personally, I have a friendship with Tessa Whitehead. We worked together for a long time, and we have the same ideas of around like nature and folklore and all of that. But when we, by that result, we influence each other, but in a parallel way, each other's work. Like, I'm not going out paint. I can't paint like Tessa. You know what I'm saying? But it still is like fruitful, and that's what we want with for the community, to come together so that everybody influence each other. This like soup becomes enriched by everybody's like talent, you know.
I think the word you're looking for is conch salad, not soup.
Conch salad.
There
That's better.
you go. So, Ricardo, can you share with us some examples of past submissions from the national exhibit that particularly stood out to you, and why, and how they were impactful to you?
So, there's quite a few. You put me on the spot because I don't remember the titles, but I do remember the work. One that comes to mind at the forefront as soon as you said it is it's a work by Jordana Kelly. She's a discipline artist. She does like literally I in a lot of ways there's a lot of artists who's multimedia and multidisciplinary in that like they get a concept and in whatever medium they find helps them bring that concept into reality. They choose that medium. So Jordana is one of those artists. And the piece that comes to mind, I'm trying to remember, I think it was I want to say any eight, that she did this piece where it was she went to all the major and some non as not major like keys of the Bahamas, and she collected sand. And then she basically put the sand under a microscope, zoomed in like a thousand times to get to like this level where you could see the actual shells, because you know sound is just basically a bunch of tiny broken up shells. And it was interesting because you've got to navigate these islands in a totally different way. So I thought that was one of those interesting works from previous Annie.
Letitia, can you think of any of the previous Annies that stood out to you?
I think it was NE8. You have to tell me, Ricardo, of when Sonia Farmer. It was just when the referendum happened. And Sonia Farmer did these voting cards with period blood. Is that NE8, Ricardo? I don't remember. It was either NE8 or
I think it
NE9.
was NE8 as well, just you know, because there was a lot of there's a lot of artists who was their first time exhibited in NE, and it was just one of those really good NEs that showed, you know, how the creative community had grown.
Well, Sonia, it was a good response to the referendum that just happened, about women not being able to pass on citizenship to their children, and it was so gross, which I think is what she wanted to communicate. A good art for me also like evokes a reaction to you. I mean, in you, sorry. Oh, a reaction in you, and I think Sonia was good at like pulling that out from the viewer, you know?
Okay, thank you for that. I mean, yes, art has a profound impact on society, and I think that the work that you just described shows us why. All right, so before we move on to our next segment, let's take another short break. This is University Drive. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics in procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Welcome back to University Drive. We're having a fascinating conversation with Ricardo Barrett and Letitia Pratt and talking about NE11, the wider context of the arts and society. So the theme is the void, which we discussed earlier. And I think the void is a provocative consideration. Now, we're asking for artists to turn in work around this concept of the void, but is it a call to action for all of society rather than just artists? Can you guys talk to us a little bit about that?
I think very much so that it's a call to all of society. You know, as Bahamians, I think we're a very smart bunch. And I think we have like provocative conversations about so many themes as it relates to the future of where the country is going. So it's not just for creatives. We're reaching out to creatives because I think creatives have this ability to take these conversations and produce something like physical, tangible, whether it be in words or you know, music or visually, that helps propel the conversation and keep the conversation active. But I do believe it's for the rest of society to say, hey, you know, what actively, how do we see ourselves, and let it not just be this conversation that comes up when it's like political, you know, issues, you know, when it when we don't hate, when we don't like a certain political group, and then, you know, we don't think they're doing what they should be doing. Like, what do we as a people individually do, or how do we make that change?
You know, as we're thinking about Caribbean futurism and artwork, it puts me in mind of, you know, as a professor at UB, I'm dealing a lot with AI. And, you know, in terms of students' writings, I'm wondering, in terms of the art world and the art community, where do you guys stand on AI? Because I know, you know, I think maybe it was a year or two ago, there was this discussion about these, even the, I think it was the profile pictures on whatever social media, and it being artified in certain ways, and a lot of artists becoming very concerned about that and what that means, right, for actual artwork or people actually producing. I mean, even the actors' strike, when was that, last year, in terms of thinking about taking people's voices or their physical appearance and placing it into works when they may have been dead for the last 10 years. So I wonder what you guys think about that. And again, if we're thinking about the future, we're thinking about technology and art and the future, what do you stand on that?
Well, I personally stand as AI as a tool. It should not be like the thing that you only create AI works, but it could be a tool to help you, to help like enhance your practice. I was in Jamaica recently, and I spoke to somebody, forgive me for forgetting their name, but they were talking to me about a project of like how this person was interacting with AI as if they were having a conversation. And that's something that I find interesting. Like, how can you use AI in your practice? If you're thinking about the future, it's going to come up, you know? How can you use AI to like interact with you as human? Because the N11 is asking about, is like focusing on connection, you know, connection between people and nations and all of these things. How does AI help or hinder that? That's a question. That's what I'm thinking about, you know?
Because in as much as AI and technology brings us together, it simultaneously
separates us
apart in certain ways, right?
And so that tension is interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And if somebody can explore that, I would enjoy.
Good. Ricardo. Chardo.
Well, I want to touch base on what the teacher said. First of all, AI is a tool. You got to be careful of that, because in the future, someone could find the same thing. I'm going to be like, see, they were promoting slavery from then. You know, I mean, like, it's interesting, though. Because I have personal opinions about AI, and then there's my opinions as it reflects like society as a whole. But generally, I would say I would want to make a point here. It's interesting because this is a perfect example of creatives thinking about what the future looks like, basically creating work in film, books, whether it be like fantasy. And we are now primed to even have this conversation, right? Because now AI is a thing that's real. You know, it's growing. You know, you could literally have, they have apps. I don't know if you guys are aware of this fully, but you know, you could download an app and have a full-on conversation with AI, and it learns about you. It learns your routine, and you could, like, you know, go about your day. You have persons in China, a lot of women who have AI boyfriends, you know? So it's not just this idea of a tool that's just, you know, you use, but people are like using it socially, emotionally as well, like for real kind of like connections, believe it or not. But I think we shouldn't navigate away from it. I think we should just be cautious. You know, I think people who are in the business of like the actual persons who own the AI, as in the tools or how we're seeing it, at the end of the day, I think a lot of those persons are trying to make money off of it, right? So there's going to be, I think, a lot of fail safes as it relates to how people actually use AI. Because right now it's free for the most part for a lot of things. You know, you spoke to people using it in writing. You know, you have people just type it in like an essay on this and they get like a whole thing. But I don't think that's going to be, you know, so, but I don't think that's going to be the norm forever. So I think there's going to be moments where the people who own these things, because right now it's just learning. People have made it free because they're trying to get their systems to learn to be human. And I think there's going to be a huge like pay stop, you know, to making that happen.
Yeah, I'm really interested in where it's going to go, as I said, because I definitely see the value in AI, even in the classroom, even with helping students understand how to write better. But I think that there is an abuse of it that we really need to be cautious of, and also at the same time, not allow it to take over. Because again, you can be a great AI artist, but if everyone is using the AI to create art, then what happens to that natural talent that we actually have to hone and practice and do over and over again ourselves to try to build our own skills so we can do it? If the electricity goes out, are we still able to create art, right? As we wrap up, can you share any final thoughts or highlights about any Levin that you're particularly excited about? Or better yet, give our listeners an opportunity. What are the deadlines? Where can they, who can they contact in order to get more information about any Levin?
So the deadline is July 4th. You can contact either me or Ricardo through the submission portal. It's submissions, once again, it's submissions at nagb.org.bs. I'm super excited because it's like, well, it's the first NE I've worked on, but also because it's a fun theme. I think with all the intellectual stuff, at the end of the day, it's about like futurism and space, and I want everybody to have fun with it.
And we encourage persons to, even before you submit your final proposal, that if you have questions, you know, you just send it in the email and we'll respond. Don't feel, you know, hesitant at all. We're there.
And again, the deadline is July 4th at midnight, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so literally when you hear the fireworks, when you hear the fireworks, if you're in New Providence or in the States, or actually, you know, you've missed the deadline and it's done.
All right, fair enough. So hopefully you'll get a lot of submissions. I'm really excited about this idea. I too, little as it's known, is a bit of a science fiction geek, and so I'm really excited about this. So thank you, Ricardo and Leticia, for sharing your insights and the exciting vision of NE11. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey into the future and art and society. Until next time, this is Craig Smith signing off from University Drive.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.